This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Colleagues say Cameroonian troops shot the couple dead last week as they traveled to help patients wounded in this region's ongoing conflict.
That's reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from Northwest Cameroon. Details coming up. Also, Malian officials say President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta has won a second term with two-thirds of the ballots in Sunday's runoff election. And the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, passed away today at the age of 76. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, medical staff are fleeing hospitals in Cameroon's troubled English-speaking regions after attacks this month killed several nurses and left many wounded. Medics say they are struck between a military that accuses them of aiding armed separatists and rebel fighters who say hospitals betray them to the army. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Bamenda in northwest Cameroon.
Funeral music plays as mourners gather at the home of Nancy Aza and her husband John Padisco in northwest Cameroon. Both nurses, they run separate clinics in the English-speaking town of Bengue. Colleagues say Cameroonian troops shot the couple dead last week as they traveled to help patients wounded in this region's ongoing conflict. Elvis Ndansi is with the Cameroon Trade Union of Nurses. He says the killings and abuse provoked outrage in the medical corps.
The military comes, chased them out of the hospital, brutalized them, beat them. As medical personnel, we all stand to condemn this act and say they are very wrong. Medical personnel are supposed to be protected in times of war. They are there to take care of all casualties, be they from the military, be they from the Ambazonian secessionist. Their role is to save life.
Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai of the English-speaking Southwest region denies the military is responsible for such attacks. He says the separatists seeking an English-speaking state in Cameroon are the ones to blame.
Cette situation est sérieusement combattue par les forces de sécurité.
Bilai says he has instructed the military to protect all hospitals from armed gangs that have extended their atrocities to burning hospitals and attacking medical staff. Despite the danger of traveling in the region, hundreds of medics showed up to honor the couple and to bury their colleagues. Nurse Array Rose says the Association of Nurses called on them to show solidarity by joining the funeral service.
We have mobilized to let the world know that doctors, nurses, laboratory technicians, and pharmacists are tortured and killed just for saving lives. God spared mine when I was pulled out of my hospital and beaten just because I was accused of hiding terrorists. Many are dead, many are wounded.
The violence has led patients and even medical staff to desert hospitals in both the northwest and southwest. 18-year-old Mondi Ernestine says when she took her younger brother to Bamenda Regional Hospital, there was nobody to treat him.
God has been sustaining him. We were not attended to in hospital for a week because the staff was absent. We had to carry him on our backs through the bush to Bamenda, which is a bit calm. He is recovering, but my fear is that many are dying in the bushes just because there is no nurse to help.
The Cameroon Medical Council says due to the ongoing conflict, the exact number of medical staff who have fled the two volatile regions is unknown. Governor Bilai is calling on them to return.
Ce n'est pas une situation facile parce que le traumatisme des assassinats le traumatisme des meurtres.
He says convincing hospital staff to return is not easy because of the trauma inflicted on them and the population by armed groups. He says all political leaders and civil society groups should educate runaway staff to return. Especially, he says, now that the military is protecting medical facilities. More than 300 civilians and security forces have been killed in Cameroon's English-speaking regions since 2016, when separatists launched their drive for an independent state they call Ambazonia. The United Nations says at least 200,000 people have been internally displaced in the conflict and tens of thousands have fled to neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Bamenda, Northwestern Cameroon.
Malian officials say President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita has won a second term with two-thirds of the ballots in Sunday's runoff election. His opponent, former finance minister Soumaila Cisse, claims the vote was rigged, although election monitors say they saw no evidence of cheating. Turnout was officially put at 34% compared with the 20% figure that came out right after the election. The election was a rematch of the 2018 runoff that gave the 73-year-old Keita his first five-year term in office. So far, he has not been able to fence off an increase in ethnic and Islamist militant violence or turn around the economy of one of the world's poorest countries. Nearly 500 polling places never opened due to security concerns. Internet service was shut down today. While Zimbabwe's opposition and ruling party filing lawsuits over last month's presidential election, political momentum has stalled while the courts deliberate. The opposition MDC Alliance alleges the ruling ZANU-PF committed voter fraud, while ZANU-PF says the opposition's complaint is meritless. In the meantime, the inauguration of President-elect Emmerson Mnangagwa is on hold. Reporter Kudzai Zevenvashi has more details.
Paul Mangwana is ZANU-PF's legal secretary and leads the team representing the party's challenge to the MDC Alliance.
We are on very sound legal ground that this application has no merit. It's just a way of soothing the feelings of losers. But nevertheless, they're exercising their constitutional right. We meet them in court.
Mangwana says they are confident that there is no sound legal argument to challenge the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission's announcement that Emmerson Mnangagwa narrowly won the July 30th election. ZANU-PF filed its suit against the alliance Wednesday. The alliance says its candidate Nelson Chamisa won the election and filed a court challenge last week. Citizen Manifesto, an initiative by various non-governmental organizations, has studied the Electoral Commission's data. It says there are anomalies that gives credence to the MDC allegations. Sam Farai Monroe is the creative director at Magamba Network, one of the organizations involved in running Citizen Manifesto.
Some of the anomalies include that, according to ZEC data, 10 polling stations had more than 100% voter turnout, which is, of course, impossible. We've also found that polling stations went missing, and this is also through analyzing the ZEC results data themselves. You also had cases of double counting by ZEC.
What's more, he says before the election, other issues favored the ruling party, such as bias in the state-controlled media and the late release of the voters' rolls.
I personally believe that the opposition would have a case based on the fact that, on the one hand, there are the various, you know, discrepancies and anomalies that we're pointing out. Also, in the build-up to elections, there wasn't a level playing field.
While this legal battle could prove bruising, last month's election was relatively peaceful compared with previous polls that have been characterized by significant violence. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zwinavashe from Harare.
A lawyer for Ugandan lawmaker Robert Kyagulani says he appeared to have been badly beaten and could not walk when he was brought into a military court today on charges of treason and terrorism. The lawyer told VOA Swahili Service Kyagulani was transferred by helicopter from the army barracks in the town of Gulu to a military facility in Kampala. He goes back to court next week. Kyagulani, also known as pop singer Bobby Wine, was arrested Monday along with more than 30 other people after protests broke out during campaigning for a by-election. There are reports that stones were thrown at President Yoweri Museveni's car, breaking windows. Kyagulani's driver was fatally shot, but police have yet to arrest anyone in the death. Kassiano Wadri, who won the election to parliament for the Arua municipality seat, and lawmaker Francis Zaki are being held in the civilian jail in Gulu. They also were in court today and ordered held on charges of treason and terrorism. The army says Kyagulani was found with two military guns, placing him under the military court's authority. Rights activists accuse Museveni's government of repressing opposition, which his supporters deny. Egyptian security forces have arrested 13 alleged Muslim Brotherhood members accused of inciting protests on August 14th. The protests marked the anniversary of the violent dispersal 5 years ago of a Muslim Brotherhood sit-in at Rabah Square in Cairo. The Egyptian Interior Ministry says that the 13 people were plotting terrorist attacks planned by fugitive leaders of the Brotherhood. According to Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy, nearly 19,000 Muslim Brotherhood figures have been arrested since Egypt designated the group as a terrorist organization 5 years ago. Alison McManus is the director of research at the Institute. She spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the timing of the arrests and Egypt's tactics to counter violent extremism.
The arrest of alleged members of the Muslim Brotherhood has been something that's publicized by Egypt's Ministry of Interior since the aftermath of the 2013 clearing of Rabah and the designation of the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization in November of 2013. What's particularly interesting about the timing of the arrest yesterday is that it fell just before the fifth anniversary of the Rabah clearing. The timing is particularly interesting and may have been to send a message about the state's desire to curtail any potential for assembly or demonstrations around the anniversary of the Rabah attack.
Talking about Rabah, Amnesty International and other human rights groups say Egypt has not done enough to address the human rights violations in the killing of several hundreds of civilians 5 years ago. But the Egyptian government argued that security forces had to act after giving the protesters enough time to disband, but instead Muslim Brotherhood resorted to armed resistance.
Even the state-sponsored investigations have come to similar conclusions. The National Council for Human Rights in Egypt, which is a state-sponsored but independent body, conducted its own investigation and found that indeed excessive force was used. Indeed, security officials failed to provide sufficient warning to protesters, and that they additionally failed to provide sufficient avenues for egress out of the protest camp safely and entrance for ambulances. So these conclusions were actually, you know, very similar to those that were found by independent investigations conducted by, say, Human Rights Watch or domestic rights groups. Additionally, even the National Council for Human Rights in Egypt called for the guilty parties to be prosecuted in line with the law. However, since that time, there have been no prosecutions of security officials involved. And furthermore, rather than being called to account for these crimes, security officials who were in positions of power and planning were actually kept in their positions and or promoted after the fact. So we've seen that regardless of whatever the justifications may have been, the investigations and calls to for accountability have simply been insufficient, even by state-sponsored reports.
Actually, last month, the Egyptian parliament passed a law granting immunity to members of the Egyptian army for actions undertaken between July 3, 2013 and January 10, 2016. Was that helpful in terms of fighting extremism or fostering an environment of impunity, as Amnesty International says?
This law actually was not necessarily connected to any kind of facilitating fighting extremism or countering terrorism, but rather was more about recognizing the honor of certain security officials. Additionally, when the law was initially proposed, the time frame that they were looking at for immunity would have been July 13th, 2013 to June 8th, 2014. So, of course, during this time is when we saw the clearing of the Rabaa camp. So it's very difficult to say that this law will have any real effect in helping Egypt to counter terrorism, but certainly we could say that it will provide immunity and undermine any kind of transitional justice or accountability, particularly around Rabaa. On the one hand, we see that attacks continue in Sinai and attempts for attacks continue on the mainland to this day. The question is whether the tactics that the state is using are appropriate and sufficient and efficient in mitigating those attacks. We can see this in terms of the strategy that's taking place, or perhaps the lack of any really clearly defined and articulated strategy that's taking place in terms of military operations that have been carried out continuously in the Sinai over the past years. These amount to slash and burn tactics, collective punishment, and in some cases there has been evidence of extrajudicial killings, which when we look at best practices for countering insurgency simply don't conform to those.
That was Alison McManus, Director of Research at the Tahrir Institute in Washington, D.C. She spoke to VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. 22 past the hour, you're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Libya's Justice Ministry says 45 people have been sentenced to death for killings during the 2011 uprising that ousted Muammar Gaddafi. A court sentenced 54 other defendants to 5 years in prison, while 22 were acquitted. Few details of the cases were given. The killings took place in the capital, Tripoli, as the country broke into violent factions. International efforts are underway to reunite the country, hold elections, and revive the faltering economy. The death sentences are to be carried out by firing squad. A draft that indicates that South Africa's government wants to eradicate a fish species responsible for a multi-billion dollar industry. The trout was brought to South Africa from Europe 125 years ago. It has since become one of the nation's most popular recreational angling species, and a number of towns and luxury estates are built around lakes holding trout. But South Africa's Department of Environmental Affairs says the trout is an alien and is preying upon indigenous species. Darren Taylor explains.
South Africa's Department of Environmental Affairs, or DEA, says trout are harming the country's biodiversity, so it wants the state to declare it invasive. But lawyer Elon Lax, the chairman of the Federation of South African Fly Fishers, or FOSAF, is a big defender of the fish.
Not a single shred of evidence have they been able to produce where trout are shown to be the proximate cause of endangerment or demise of a species.
Lax says the trout is the epitome of the fly fisherman's pursuit, but adds that the fish, which needs very clean water to survive, is much more important than that.
Trout are like a canary in the mine. If trout are battling to survive in a river, it tells you there's something wrong with your river.
Trout generally don't breed in South Africa's warmer waters, so they're reared in hatcheries and stocked every few years. The DEA blames the trout for declining numbers of indigenous fish and other animals, but it presents scant and questionable scientific evidence to support this. The DEA says, for example, trout are preying heavily upon yellowfish in the Bushman's River in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, or KZN.
In KZN, where I come from, and the rivers that I fish that have trout in them, I catch yellowfish and trout in the same pool, and this year I did just that. Sitting in the Bushman's, I caught a brown trout and a yellowfish in successive casts. The yellowfish are not under threat in the Bushman's River by any stretch of the imagination.
Scientists point out that other than their usual diet of insects, trout do indeed eat minnows, but only when the trout are relatively large, and they usually don't get big in South African streams. Lax also dismisses the DEA's claim that the trout is responsible for the demise of the ghost frog.
Trout only cover 5% of the range of the ghost frog. So if the ghost frog's in trouble, it's got to be something else that's causing it.
FOSEF says there are much bigger threats to South Africa's biodiversity.
We shouldn't be wasting all this money on debating with government whether trout are invasive or not. If you'll excuse the pun, they've got much bigger fish to fry than worry about trout.
One of those bigger fish, says Lax, is the poor state of South Africa's waterways, with human and industrial waste often destroying ecosystems.
When I talk to fish scientists just on this issue, the vast majority of them say, listen, if we don't stop the pollution and the sewage going into the rivers, nothing will survive, whether it's alien or indigenous.
The DEA's attempt to ban the trout falls under its National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, or NEMBA. Lax says FOSAF's lawyers are fighting it on the grounds that the public haven't been properly consulted and it's unconstitutional.
We say government's being overambitious, overzealous, and they simply don't have the resources to implement this properly anyway.
The DEA did not respond to VOA's requests for comment, but in response to previous legal challenges, it has rededicated itself to listing trout as invasive. In doing so, says Lax, the government seems to be working against itself. On the one hand, the government says the trout has no future in South Africa. On the other, its fisheries department, by means of a parliamentary bill, suggests that species such as trout are important to the development of aquaculture, or fish farming. Putting the state in charge of aquaculture is fueling speculation that the government wants to control the potentially lucrative trout farming sector. Trout are an expensive table fish. Lax asks the authorities to consider losses in jobs and peripheral income involved in declaring the trout an outlaw, including entire towns that have sprung up around trout angling. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. And we have some sad news here in the United States. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, passed away today at the age of 76. We're going to close our show with a little bit of her iconic music, which has meant so much to so many people around the world.
Forever and ever, 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 forever and ever on the morning rain. I used to feel so uninspired.